Welcome to Chapter Chat. My name's Christine.
And I'm Natasha.
And today we are going to be discussing more chapters of House in Flame and Shadow by Sarah J. Maas. We're going to be making our way through chapters 31 through 36. So you're safe if you've read through there. There will be no spoilers further than that. We do, you know, draw parallels between this series and Throne of Glass / ACOTAR, but we're not like spoilery diving into Throne of Glass because Natasha hasn't finished that series. Mm-hmm. So it's just very loose parallels that I'm drawing without spoiling like plot points and stuff. We're gonna dive right in!
Woo!
Woo! I'll start us into chapter 31, but before that, I kind of want to address something that's been like eating at me since last episode. Because Natasha was talking about how Vesperus raised Thea and like gave her a part of her star. Mm-hmm. And for the life of me, like I didn't remember like reading that part, or like I interpreted it differently. So I saw it differently, and I've been trying to find it. I can't fucking find it.
It's not in like the big.
Yeah, is it in like on the wall? Like, because I can't find the part where they see it on the wall either.
It's not on the wall either. It's like. I just remember because it's at the beginning of when, so it's not chapter 19, it's before chapter 19, but it's when the daughter, who's the daughter, what's her name?
Celine.
So it's when she first starts off the story, and she,
that's
like,
what I've been looking at.
She quickly goes through it, and she's like, the Asteri with the dark hair, at the very beginning. So it's like chapter 17, I think.
I don't know if it's in that section. I'm losing it. I can't find it. I know. I feel like I remember what you're talking about, and then I was looking through my notes, and I have a note. This is for chapter 30 something saying, let's talk about Vesperus raising Thea and giving her part of her star. And then so if this is true, this changes, like, I have so many other theories now that I like need, that I've been boiling on because of this, and I can't find the groundwork to build and like pick those theories apart and put them back together again with stuff from the book, because I can't find the original sentence where they talk about raising her and giving her part of the star. But I also have a note that says, and the Fae were like Thea, ! So that those Fae that I'm referencing in this note, I can't find the line where it says that they were like Thea either. But if the Fae on Midgard were like Thea, then this changes everything for me, because they are shifters. So if Thea was possibly a shifter and Vesperus was for some reason raising her, I'm wondering if she took Thea from the other Fae world with her when they went to conquer this world. Because it does feel like in the timeline, Throne of Glass was the first of these three to be conquered and then unconquered by the Asteri, if that happened. If Thea was possibly a shifter Fae, Thea also, there's these parallels that they draw, Sarah draws really quickly, randomly, that Thea rivals the badassery of the Hind. The Hind is, she's a shifter. She's the other kind of Fae. So it was Thea like a lost princess. Like I feel like I have to look over, read Throne of Glass and see if there's any mention of a lost child who was taken by the Asteri in history. Like, is she related to Aelin too?
Okay, I think, so what I remember reading is, like, yeah, so we don't know about Thea's parents, but I do remember reading that Thea was kind of like, wasn't like raised as Vesperus's daughter, like not at all.
No, but raised by her. It says I found like that she was like raised by her from when she was a child. So she's been living and serving her since she was a child.
Mm, yes.
And so this idea that Vesperus gave her part of her star, because we don't see any Fae who have this star power. Like, so this would explain where this big power comes from. It would explain why there's all these questions, like, what makes your power different from the Asteri? And I'm wondering if possibly she is related to her in a way, like, was there an Asteri that breeded with a Fae to, like, cross their... We don't know that, though. They are creating all these different creatures on Midgard to work for them. So that's not out of character for them to create different creatures to be their minions.
That's true.
Like, that's what a lot of the creatures, people we see on Midgard are, like, creations of the Asteri, like, trying to, like, make other creatures. So I don't know. It's really interesting, and I really want to dig into that, but I need to do some more research by, like, digging. My fucking iBooks, when I search a word, I'll search, like, rays, and it'll show me three raises in the whole book. And I'm like, this is absolute bullshit. And then on, I'll click on one of them, and I'll see two paragraphs up the word rays, and it's not highlighted. Oh. I'm like, why are you so stupid, iBooks? This just, it has a lot of impact on the story if she actually gave a part of her star to Theia, if that's what Vesperis did, which we kind of have that, we both have that written down, so that must have happened. And Theia is related to so many people that we know. So, like, Rhysand, the Evening Star, he is also the Evening Star. Like, his power stems from possibly an Asteri. And Rhysand is a shifter. Like, Rhysand shifts. He can shift between a human form and his form with wings.
Yes. Well, that's because he's half...
No, he's half Illyrian, but that doesn't mean that he can shift. Not all the Illyrians can shift.
That's right.
Yeah.
Interesting so. Questions that my Google. Sick brain can't really help with.
There's a lot there. There's a lot there. So if anyone listening has, like, any points of reference, like, quotes from the books that line up with any of these theories or go against any of these theories and, like, prove them wrong, please give me the page numbers so I can go look at them and study, because I'm going to be just, like, searching through the books desperate to find the quotes.
I'm like, I looked up rays and I didn't see anything.
Yeah, I looked up Vesperis and nothing came up. And I was like, this is absolute bullshit. Vesperis is in this book. Okay, let's start with chapter 31 here. I've laid the groundwork for that. We're going to continue that thread of thought next episode when more research has been done. And if any listeners have any input on that, please email me at thoseforkingfangirls@gmail.com with your thoughts and quotes and page numbers. Thank you. Much appreciated. So chapter 31 opens up right after Ethan ran into a wall and Jessiba opened it and she was like, hey.
Jessiba.
And she was like, hey, that's one way to knock. So the opening line is, Jessiba Roga led Ethan through a subterranean hall of black stone lit only by crackling fires and hearths shaped like roaring fanged mouths. Wow, I didn't pick up on that when I was listening. They all look like fanged mouths.
Vampire
fireplaces. So she leads him down this hall. There's like a bar down there and like a jazz quartet. They give him a drink and it's like smoking because it's got some Draki magic that makes it smoke. And he's just like, I need a necromancer. And Jessiba's like, I need an assistant. And he's like, I'm being serious. And she's like, I'm being serious. And that's basically their conversation there. She's like, who did you kill? And yeah. And
the Fendir heir.
The Fendir heir. Yeah. And she's like, ugh. Because at first she's like, your brother's been dead for too long. Stop asking me to bring him back from the dead.
This feels like very Magnus Bane.
It does. It does feel so Magnus Bane coded. Mm-hmm. This whole situation. Because Jessiba is emerging as this character.
Jessiba. Jessiba?
I do, apparently. As this character who's kind of misunderstood because she's so powerful, people assume that she's this crazy sorceress, but really her one true mission in life is fairly innocent, just like protecting intellect, you know, protecting information.
Yeah.
Anyway, then we go back to Bryce and her daddy. They're talking, still playing their little question games. And he's been trying to figure out why the powers of the Fae have been dwindling for the last decades. And he's like, it's my life's work. And she's like, why though? Why do you care that our powers are dwindling? And basically, he says that if we're not powerful, the Asteri won't have any use for us, and another species will come up and take our place, and we will fall down the hierarchy of the food chain in this world.
This whole part, like when I first read it, and also when I was trying to reread it too, I was just like, can we just, I just want to be out of here. Can Bryce just like be with Hunt, and now like they're escaping, like I'm just so done. So I missed so much of this chapter because I was just annoyed but also laughing at the way that like that Bryce teases Bryce her responds. Dad.
She pokes the bear many times.
It's fucking hilarious.
She asks her dad about Finn places because she's like, maybe I can get some information out of him about those. But he doesn't know what they are. And he's like, what did you learn about them? And she's like, nothing. I don't know what it is. I just heard the word. And he's like, I know you're lying. And then the prisms in his office kind of catch her attention. She starts thinking about her light and how she was able to focus it into a laser to get out of the Fae homeland in the caves. And she's like, how did I do that? I don't know. It was instinctual. And she's like, what would happen if I spread it apart in a prism? What would that do to the light? And my power seems to be getting closer and closer to what the Asteri's power is like, which, again, very interesting. Harkens back to what I was saying at the beginning of the episode. Something's up there. Something is up there.
This whole cat and mouse game with the Autumn King and Bryce. Because at first when I was reading this, I was like, oh, no. Damn, why did she go directly to her dad? Not me thinking ahead at all. But like, she is definitely trying to find out information, which at first when I was reading this, I was like, oh, shoot. She's stuck there. Damn.
Oh, shoot.
And then kind of this chapter, we get to the root of it. And she goes, I totally love how you're building yourself up as my savior. Really, A for effort on that front. But let's cut the bullshit. I'm locked up here because you want something from me. What is it? And then that's when he brings out the prison. And she says, like, the prison fractures light and her power condenses it. And then he also brings out the sister device. Do you know what that is? Is that the Orpheum or whatever?
Yeah, it has that weird name. Not Orpheum, but it's like, it's something like that with an O.
Yeah. And so he says that that device gathers it back into one beam again. I am attempting to add more to the light in the process of reforming it. If the light might be pulled apart and strengthened in its most basic form, there's a chance that it will coalesce into a more powerful version of itself.
Yeah. So basically, he's been holed up looking for patterns his whole life.
Yeah.
With the Fae and trying to figure out
a really fun situation. Part where
what
he goes, I once asked for your brother to provide me with a seed of his starlight, and Bryce goes, gross, don't call it that.
Yeah, he has a terrible line here where he's like, my only interest in you lies in the bloodline you can pass on, he says to his own daughter, which is really bitchy. And then she's like, you know why you're not powerful? The Asteri is taking your power through the water and there's nothing you can do about it. And he's like, I tire of you, leave me. Like, this bitch, he's such an ass.
Yeah
That's basically chapter 31.
So chapter 32 is the beginning of the escape for Hunt, Baxian, and Rue. The Hawk and Mordok like enter into their cell and they're like, come on, one of you guys is not gonna make it to the end of the day, so let's go. And then
he's like, Regulus wants an audience with you.
Yeah. So they file into the elevator. It's really quickly. And like, there's a bunch of like little lines about how like hunt.
Well, Lydia's in the elevator. Hold on. When it slides open.
I'm getting there.
Well, you already filed into the elevator.
No, no. She slides in like in the next, in the next, when she goes up. So like they
they're like, I thought they were walking and they're like, can we please take the elevator? And as they get to the elevator, it dings open and she's inside it. And they're like, oh, hi, Lydia.
Oh, okay. I guess that's how it happened. Anyways, there's also like a like hunt that keeps biting back. And then one of the dread wolves are like, oh, maybe I should get too close. And like the, what is his name? Not Hunt.
Baxian?
No, what's Hunt's name? Like his like.
Athalar.
What's his other title?
Oh, the killer, the murderer of the dark angel of something, death.
I don't know. Anyways,
what is it?
I don't know. But they're like, oh, the so and so still has his bite or yeah, whatever. It's just funny.
So and so.
Okay, so Lydia's in there with her injured arm from the burns. They're like going up. This really reminds me of Winter
New
Soldier.
Moon. Oh.
No. Or New Moon. Yes. They go up and then like suddenly sunlight hits them as they ascend and they all like hiss and the hawk goes like, just a little bit of like what you're going to feel with Regulus and the Asteri. And then Lydia fires two warning shots into his head.
He had it coming.
I was like, yes.
Yeah. And the Baxian's like, what the fuck? And then she kills everyone else in there with them, like the two other dreadwolves in there with them. She's just like, bang, bang. And she's like, we have 1 minute and 35 seconds to get to the car. So shut the fuck up and listen.
Chapter 33 is like a huge just action sequence.
It's an action sequence. So that was the beginning of chapter 33 is the 1 minute and 35 seconds.
Anyways, they're like 1 minute, 35 seconds. They got to go. Lydia grabs Rune. And she's like,
Rune couldn't even walk here. They had to drag him to the elevator.
They had to drag him to the elevator. And then Lydia had to pick him up and throw him over her shoulder. I was like, damn, girl.
Woman is strong.
So they are trying to make it to the underground garage where there is an open-aired Jeep waiting for them under the palace. So Lydia gets in the driver's seat. Hunt is in the passenger seat. Baxian is on the machine gun that's like mounted like in the back.
She's like,
soldier.
Get on the gun.
And then Rune is in the back and he is just like passing
banging
out,
against
banging
the
against
wall.
The wall as like Lydia's like crazy driving. And Hunt is like kind of impressed by her driving. And so they make it to like, he's like gets impressed. And he's like, uh-oh, there's all these guards. And then Baxian goes like, boom, 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 boom. Just annihilates like the seven guards at the front, and then they have to make it out of that, and then they go around, and then there's another guard post, and one of them
I just picture them spiraling down one of those fucking parking garage spirals.
I was like, this is also giving like Avengers at the very beginning with like Maria in the Jeep. So, and then they make it again. There's another guard post, and one of like the angels like shoots up into the sky, and Hunt tries to use his power, his lightning power to kill him, but it just goes like.
He's like too worn out to even get it to go.
But it's okay because Baxian again has the gun. Boom! 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 And then takes out everyone else. And so then they get rid of the guards. They're great. They got through it. And now they're driving. And Lydia has to take a different road that she didn't, like, know because the first road was blocked, right? Is that how that happened?
I think that's, like, a little further on. Because first they have to get out of the city and, like, the gate's coming down.
Oh.
And they just make it under. She's like steps on the gas and it's just like scraping the top and it breaks off the gun.
Oh, yeah. The gun's gone.
And they're like cutting it a little close, aren't we? And she's like, shut up.
Then Declan comes over the radio.
Oh my God. Wait. Yeah. That happens immediately. Like right after they get out the garage. Yeah. And I started crying when Rune starts crying when he hears Declan on the radio.
This is, again, very Avengers, like on your left.
Yes.
And then so they get out of the city. Tristan comes alongside them in a white van, and immediately he goes like, "What happened to your hand?"
Yeah. Fuck.
And I think so. What? So do they get into the white van or do like...
So it feels like they're just kind of saying hi. We're here with you. And then they kind of split off again.
Yeah. And so then we have a couple of those agents come over the speaker again. And they're like, so-and-so here.
The Orphean agents.
Yes. And then, then we hear Arithis. And she's like, Arithis here. At the palace, ready to blast it to hell. And then they blast it to hell.
Yeah. So Lydia's coordinated an attack along the railroad that stretches across the spine of the continent. And that is how the Asteri get their weapons delivered to the Eternal Palace. So, like, there's someone waiting at every major stop to like blow it to hell.
Yeah.
And that's something that Orpheans wanted to do forever, and Lydia finally managed to organize it with Arithis, which is so cool.
Yes. So they make it, I think, to the gun gets taken out. They're making their way to the Dread Charger. And
oh yeah. And they're like, "We've got good news and bad news." That's how it ends. And he's like, "Do you remember that part?"
I just remember the end. I said they have to go airborne.
Yeah, so right before that, she's like, "What's the good news?" And it's like, well, you made it through, but also Murdoch and 24 Dreadwolves made it through before they closed the gates to the city. So they're going to be on you in 10 minutes. Drive faster." And Lydia's like, "I'm driving as fast as I can."
Yeah.
And then she's like, "Prepare for an aerial landing."
Chapter 34. They break Chapter up the 34. Action scene.
Yeah, we break up the action scene. Bryce is poking around the house. This guy, okay, so the Autumn King has like a sauna and a lap pool in his mansion. Like, it just sounds so ridiculous. Like, I wasn't paying attention to the names of the rooms like the first time because there's just so many. And I was like, what the fuck is he doing with a sauna? He is a fae. Like, he has eternal life. Like, it's basically, it sounds like a celebrity's house. Like, he has like the cold plunge.
Yeah, of course.
It's ridiculous. So she's poking around. She goes to Rune's room and pokes around in there. And then she feels bad for like Rune and how he was tortured by her dad. And that's about it for that before we go back to the action sequence. Did you have anything else for that section?
Nope.
So this is where she takes a different road to get to the ocean faster. Mm-hmm. And it's a dirt road and it ends pretty quickly. And she's like, fuck. There's like all these trees. So the boys have to get airborne much faster than she planned. And she has to run because their wings aren't strong enough to also hold Rune and her. Mm. Rune is like a sack of potatoes right now. So she gets out and shifts. And this is the first time we see her shifted. Like, we've never talked about her shifted.
Yeah.
She's like a near white doe is what they describe her as. Mm-hmm. And she like nuzzles Rune's neck before she takes off. And it was really giving that one meme of Twilight where Jacob is in that gray suit.
Yes.
Bella pets his head.
Well, this whole scene was like quite devastating because
it was.
It's not what the plan was originally. Yeah. And Rune is also like not saying anything. Like,
yeah,
it's said multiple times, Rune says nothing.
Yeah.
And he does nothing.
He's kind of in shock and his arm, he's in so much pain.
Yeah.
Because his hand was just cut off and isn't healing yet.
Yeah. And then as she like leaps into the forest, she's using herself as bait. He does finally croak out Lydia.
Lydia! It's like, wow, delayed much?
And then they shoot off into the sky and they have now an aerial view of what's going on down there.
Yeah.
And all the Dreadwolves are after her and they watch as Lydia's being hunted. And yep. now Ruin is worried and he's like, put me down. Put me down.
He also says the last line. He's like, we have to go back. Like, what are you going to do if they put you down? You can't even stand up. They're like hauling him. One is holding under his arms and one is holding under his legs because he's that limp that he can't help at all. Yeah, and they're just so weak. And yeah, and they're so weak from being in the dungeons that like they need all, it's taking all their effort to hold him and get themselves to the ship because their wings are really weak. So it's just so stupid. Rune is so delayed.
Yeah, and so it's just devastating because we see that Lydia has nothing in front of her but a fucking yeah. like half a mountain cliff. And a cliff to jump off yeah. of.
Yeah. And then basically chapter 35 comes around. The boys land on the ship, the submarine that surfaces, and they're dead tired, and Therion's there being like, hey, land here. And as soon as they land, Ruin is like, Lydia. Therion's like, what do you want us to do? We can't get this any closer to the shore. And he was like, not this. You go help her. And Therion's like, oh, God. And he strips and jumps right into the water. He's like, all right. I love Therion. I feel like he's the most underrated
yeah.
hero of the story here. Like, he has all of the heart, but he's got that, like, that surface that feels like he's like nonchalant and doesn't care and like mm-hmm. is kind of lazy, but then like he really, really does care and really wants to help his friends and will always pull through for them in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like the definitely my most favorite, I think, guy
of this crew.
Like, I don't yeah. care too much about like Declan or Tristan or. No. Like, I mean, like, Hunt's great. My favorite is Rune. Mm-hmm. Braxian, don't know too much about him. You know,
Braxian, I think it is.
I keep calling him Braxian. It's in my notes. It's Braxian everywhere.
Oh, my God. I do like that he has a British accent in the audiobook. It's always so fun. Yes.
But okay, so we shift back to Lydia in this scene, and she oh, keeps yeah. running, and she's like, I don't know what to do. And so she gets there and she shifts into her human form, and mm-hmm. Mordok, and he's a Dreadwolf, he shifts into his human form, and he points a gun at her and he's like, you've nowhere to go, Lydia.
Yeah, and he also is like, this feels familiar. What did you say to Sophia Renast?
Oh,
again,
yeah.
We bring up Sophie Renast for no apparent reason. It doesn't really feel familiar because it was 50 million pages ago. It was the first chapter of Sky and Breath.
I don't even know what did they say?
So he says, what did you say to her? Are you faster than a bullet? And he says the same thing to Lydia. And then she jumps off the cliff and he shoots her.
She pulls off her collar first.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really like get that. Like, what is the collar?
She's had a collar on her throat. I mean, around her neck that, you know, binds her to the
hysteria. That shows like how... And it doesn't like that thing show her how many people she's killed. Like it represents like 100 kills or something.
Mm. I don't know.
The silver thing on it. I forget. But yeah, she does do that. And I was like, uh-huh. Doesn't really mean much because we haven't talked about it that much.
Yeah. I got it more like an ownership thing. But yeah, so she yeah. jumps off, plunges off the ship. And like they're like off the cliff. And they're like firing at her. And they keep like getting like near her feet. But then one bullet does land as she's plunging down into the water. And it yeah. gets her. And she dies. It says, yeah, Lydia dies.
The last sentence, Lydia let out a choked, bloody laugh as she died. That's the end of the chapter.
I just remember being like, okay, she's going to come back, right?
I was like, she didn't die, though. She did it. Therian saving her with the water.
But she did die. Like, I think
she did.
Yeah.
So then we go into chapter 36. And it's, we're back to my favorites, Ethan and Jessica.
It's like Jessica, Jessica. But Jessica.
Jessica. And Ethan's noting her terrarium of animals that she has in her office. And I forgot about this rumor that, like, the animals in this terrarium were all people that Jessica turned into animals because she didn't like them or they annoyed her. And we never found out if that's actually true. So this is, I think, when she's like, we can't bring your brother back to life. And why would you want to bring this Fender back to life? And she's literally spelling out for him that he should be the next alpha. Okay. She's like, remember when all the wolves followed you to the Asphodel Meadows, even though they weren't supposed to, but like they did because you wanted to help the humans. And he's like, yeah, what's your point? I'm not here to debate wolf politics. Like, he's so oblivious. And then he's like, I know what you're thinking. And then Jessica goes, you don't even know what you're thinking, Holstrom. And I was just like, this is so real. Mm-hmm. This is so real. And then she's like, I am serious. I really do need an assistant. Ever since Quinlan left, like, I haven't been able to find someone good. And then she's like, if memory serves correctly, you were a history major. And this was just like mind-boggling to me because I'm like, what do you mean Ethan Holstrom was a sunball player? I was like, why is he constantly talking about sunball and not talking about the history of sunball? Not once have I heard him bring up a random historical fact. All he ever does is compare things to sunball. So because he's a history major, she's like, he'd be good for this job. And he's like, how did you know that? And she's like, Quinlan was always so proud of you and she always used to talk about it. And I'm like, when did she talk about it? I always hear her talking about her sunball. Anyway, Ethan is like, fine, I'll work for you for a few days. Jessica's like, I'll put your body on ice. So once the necromancer gets here, then she'll be able to help your Fendir situation and the body will still be fine. And he's like, well, I could just go leave and find the nearest necromancer. And she's like, well, a lot of necromancers are fucking assholes and they won't do anything for you. So he's like, fine, I'll
work
for you.
Or
they'll do it wrong.
There's a little thing here at the very end, which I don't know is important, but I did write it down, that Ethan opens a crate called Lazivus, L-A-S-I-V-U-S, and uses his claws like a crowbar. And she's like, yes. If you break it, you bought it.
Bye. Yeah, I do remember that.
Anyways, just wanted to note that she's got a crate called Lazivus. And I don't know if that's an Asteri or whatnot, but
I don't know. After he does that crowbar situation, we go back to Quinlan and her dad. And she's kind of giving him one last chance to redeem his character in the slightest. And she's like, why haven't you cleaned out Ruin's room? And she's like, do you ever think about what would have happened if you didn't like abandon me and weren't an asshole to Ruin? Something to that. Basically, like, do you ever think what would have happened if we were like a family? Mm-hmm. And he's like, every day. And this is his like redemption half a second.
Half.
And she's like, why do you like act like you feel bad and guilty? Like, why don't you try explaining yourself? And he's like, I'm a king. Kings don't need to explain themselves. He shows some jealousy about Randall. He calls him her real dad. Like, why does she need him? And he lives with regret every day that he got to raise her. And I'm just like, this is so weird. It's basically, she's trying to get him to say something nice to maybe, like, just to make sure that there's no drop of, like, kindness left in him. Mm-hmm. And he's basically playing into it for a minute. And I think he's doing it just to get Quinlan to tell him more stuff. Because he turns on a dime about it. She says, tell me tell me about Rune and Hunt or something in the dungeons, or like help me get them out. She says something about them and he's like, they're not in the dungeons anymore. And he like completely shifts tone and she's like, what do you mean? And he's like, they escaped this morning. And she's like, why didn't you tell me? And he's like, well, you didn't technically ask. Like, it's so annoying. And she throws her plate at him because she's like eating a ham sandwich. And he basically just, you know, they had like one half a second moment where it just felt like they were going to have like a deep talk. And then he's like, you're going to bring me to that Fey world, whether you like it or not. And he's like, you know what? I heard your mom adopted a son. You wouldn't want that son to die, would you? And she's like, you're not going to do anything to them. And he's like, you know what I can do? Tell Regulus. And if Regulus likes me, then when I get you to open a portal to the Fey world, I might get a big section of it because he'll be grateful. And it's just like so disgusting how quickly this takes a turn. I think the first time we read this, both me and Natasha were probably like, here we go.
Yeah.
Redemption. Yep.
I'm like, oh, wait. Because at first I was like, oh, he's keeping her there to keep her safe. Like, it is true.
It's a secret plan.
No.
No. Okay. And then he's like, you might be able to barter with him now that you have truth teller, meaning barter with Regulus. And she's like, what makes you think that this can do anything to them? I tried it on an Asteria and it didn't work. And she's like telling a half truth. And she's like, well, it didn't work and because Nesta interfered. But he goes, did you order them to work? And she's like, what the fuck? How was I supposed to know to order them to work? What does that even mean? And he tells her that together they can open a portal to nowhere. Now, this is where it gets very interesting. Mm-hmm. He says, the Star Sword is made, and the knife, Truth Teller, can unmake things. Now, I feel like this kind of went over my head with all the other information we were learning in the moment there.
Yeah.
But he says, like, made and unmade, antimatter and matter. And this begs the question, what the fuck does he mean it can unmake things? Can it unmake the Trove? Mm. Can it unmake Nesta? Like, can it turn her back to a human? Like, what can it do? Can it unmake the horn? Can it make the objects not work anymore?
Maybe.
That's scary, man. Mm.
A lot of power Azrael had just sitting there for
and
years.
He didn't know, as Vesper said, like, you'll never understand what they can do. Like, can it also, so all this talk of making and unmaking, and like made basically means like the cauldron made it, right? Like, that's what we're led to believe. Mm-hmm. But the more I think about it, it's like these objects, the Trove, was made by the Asteri as objects to help them like travel and control different worlds. Mm-hmm. So was it did the Asteri, like, does them warping things and using their magic make things made? Because they warped the cauldron into like the evil thing that it is.
Well,
because
it's like
Nesta.
All so is Truth Teller and Star Sword, are those both from the Asteri?
So the Star Sword and Truth Teller, I was under the impression that Thea and Fionn made them in the cauldron.
Okay.
And they pulled them out. I think we see them in the story, like, pulling it out of the cauldron. Mm-hmm. And they were objects to defeat the Asteri.
Yeah, because they're both made out of
That black
Iridian.
Iridian. Meteorite stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know. It's very interesting. Again, there's a lot there in that one sentence that one is made and one can unmake things.
Yeah. Because, like, all of the big magical objects in this world are from the Asteri.
Yeah, it feels like they were all forged by the Asteri. Mm-hmm. Even Nesta, like, her silver flames are because of the Asteri and their warped cauldron. Mm-hmm. And, like I was saying, there's that character Keltaine in Throne of Glass, and first she has regular flames, and then her flames are like silvery shadow things, shadow flames after they put like the word thing in her. So like that's also an Asteri thing, used to open portals between worlds and stuff. So it feels like Maid might have less to do with the cauldron and more to do with the way the Asteri warped the cauldron with their power. But we don't know for sure. Basically, after this, she's like, where did you read about Nowhere and the power of these swords? And he says, I read about it in the Avalian archives and females aren't allowed. So you'll never be able to read it for yourself. And she was like, ugh.
She's dumb.
He's so annoying. And he's like, a female has never possessed the star sword before this. And she's like, are you fucking kidding me? Because Thea is the one who brought the star sword here in the first place. And so they've banned women from like retrieving the star sword in this caves
of princess.
Yeah, the princes in Avalon. So that women can't have the sword because they just don't want women to be in power.
Yep.
After like a powerful woman is the one who brought Fae here in the first place. So basically we leave the chapter with Bryce being really frustrated, and then she just like goes into her room and lays down. She's like, damn it, how am I gonna get to Avalon?
Yeah, we talked about how like basically the Autumn King wants to conquer the Fae world, right?
Oh yeah, that was, I didn't say the specific words, but like when he was like, you're gonna take me there whether you like it or not, I think that's when he was like saying he's gonna conquer that world, and she's like, you are so dumb if you think you are going to go in there and conquer anything
with half your power.
Yeah, she's like, they are so much more powerful than you. And that's when she's just like, wow, he's just an opportunist, and he doesn't give a shit about the Asteri ruling over us as long as he gets his piece of the pie, which is gross. He's gross. And those are our chapters today.
A little bit of a shorter episode.
Yeah, but Natasha's sick, so
yeah.
I think this is a good length. It's a good length.
We're halfway through Act Two.
We are. How are we? Do we know what percent through the book we are?
We are 40% of the way through.
Okay, we're making progress. Next week, we'll probably be diving into chapters, or next chapter chat, we'll be diving into chapters 37 to 41, perhaps, depending on how much is dropped in those chapters. But we love hearing from y'all in the meantime. And if you have any theories, we'd love to read them on the show. You can email us at thoseforkingfangirls@gmail.com. If you don't know, we are a viewer-supported podcast, so we have a Patreon, and you can get the show without ads, so ad-free, by joining the Team Jacob $5 tier of our Patreon. And there's lots of other perks there, too. Our main show that gets released every Friday has an extra half an hour show attached to the Patreon-only version, where of course it's ad free, and also we have half an hour where we talk about like more personal stories, stuff going on in our lives, and that's super fun. The community there is so fun, and we have lots of other fun perks at the other tiers up in the Patreon, so check that out in the show notes. patreon.com/thoseforkingfangirls. We're on Instagram at @thoseforkingfangirls. We are on TikTok at Those Forking Fangirls, and on YouTube, youtube.com/@thoseforkingfangirls. And you could subscribe for free there so you never miss an episode of the main show, or subscribe in your favorite podcast listening app, or follow in your favorite podcast listening app for free so you never miss an episode.
And
thank you so much for hanging with us today. We love chatting with you about our favorite books. We'll see you next week. I'm Christine.
I'm Natasha.
Bye.